KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. William Trogdon, who writes under the name William Least Heat Moon, is one of Missouri's best-known authors. Starting with Blue Highways in 1983, he's written 7 books exploring travel, humanity, and history. Now he's written his first novel. William joined Intersection to talk about that novel, Celestial Mechanics, A Tale for a Midwinter Night. William will be at Flat Branch Pub on Tuesday, May 2nd for a book signing party, beginning at 4:30. Here's our conversation. To me, a novel seems like such a complicated proposition, possibly more complicated than going out and talking to real people, which is what you've done in the past or dealt with history, you know, and the solidity of history or the facts surrounding it, even though history is open to interpretation. Why did you decide to write a novel now? And were you intimidated by that prospect?
I'm not sure I was intimidated any more than I'm intimidated by any other particular writing I've taken up. It's a challenging thing for me. But I decided to do it because I had a few seeds of the story that just kept haunting me. And I decided that I think this story is interesting enough to pursue. Where it was going to go, I didn't know. And the way that the novel has ended up was something of a surprise to me as I went. I've been working, I worked on it for 10 years on a notebook, keeping notes and thinking about building details and facts, a little bit of dialogue even. But the actual writing process that most people imagine, where I'm sitting at the desk and putting down paragraphs more or less in order, that took 4 years. So in that way, it was a 14-year process. Not unusual for me to take 4 years, 5 years, 6 years to write a book.
And where did these seeds come from? Were they seeds from your travels and your conversations? Well,
technically, yes, from my travels. The first seed came in Hartford, Connecticut. I was talking with a woman at breakfast in a hotel there, and she mentioned and showed me a 1903 seed catalog. And in the catalog, there was a yellowed envelope and an order form. And I said, I wonder what would happen if I sent this order in. That was about 1999, something like that. If I sent this order in, I wonder if anything would happen. The company was in Iowa, and I began thinking about that, and I thought, well, probably gone now. Then I started thinking, what if that old seed order through some warp in time – I don't believe in warps of time, but this is fiction. Mm-hmm. But what if it did? It there was a response. What would happen? And immediately after that, I started imagining a neighbor – a man, the character in the book, Silas Fortunato, who discovers that his wife has been unfaithful to him, coming upon letters, and to escape his misery, she's gone for one reason or the other. I can't see too much or I'll kill some suspense here. But he takes off and is driving through southern Missouri along the Arkansas state line and sees a sign for the famous apple down there called Arkansas Blacks. And he's staring at that sign and has a car accident. So it's about his recovery and about his relationship with three women, not really all at once. One of the women possibly is not actually there. That's right, for the reader to discover.
And so we have these three women who are the wife who started to take shape in your mind as this wife who's disappeared, and she's Dominique, Dolores, Didi, and then we have her sister Celeste, and the woman who may not be there, who's named Kismet. Who is his neighbor.
Neighbor, yes, and tells him that she is a Wiccan, a witch, and she in many ways is a reflection of his own mind. The two sisters are radically different, and between those differences, between the sisters and the possibility of what this witch, which is she's quite wise. That's where he begins to find his way into really almost another existence, a new existence after the injury.
And when we're talking about, so we know sort of where Silas comes from. He's sort of born in your mind as this person who is searching, who is confronting a lot of personal difficulties because he's been seriously injured, and his wife. And how did her sister and Kismet start to form in your mind? How did their personalities come to be?
That's a good question. The sister, the elder sister, the first woman that's in his life, formed because I was interested in the incredible self-absorption that we see in America today, and I wanted to write something about self-absorption and the dangers that it presents. So I was thinking of this particular character, and my wife, Jan, when talking about it, she said, well, she sounds like a sociopath.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And I said, do you have anything on sociopathy? And she brought me a book, and there was a list in there, I think, of 12 characteristics of a sociopath. And I had already written the character of Dolores, who goes by the name of Dominique. And I read through this list, and I said, my heavens, that's the character right to the last point. I couldn't believe it. Somebody's now going to think that I took that list and built a character from it, but it was the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sister is a woman who is pretty much 180 degrees turned from that. The book is very much about the dangers of self-absorption and trying to connect with something bigger than self. There's a lot of talk in there about otherness. And Silas, the protagonist of Celestial Mechanics, is an amateur astronomer, and he's working to find ways to build a personal ethical code from what he can understand and comprehend from his astronomy. So we're taking the largest part that a human being can know and bringing it down to particular individuals, and how does that fit together? So he's made up, if you want to call it a religion, his own religion. It's a way of seeing things, which he calls himself a cosmetarian, which is a Presbyterian boy who walked away from organized religion but believes in the cosmos. So there's a whole moral ethic that comes out of the way he sees the cosmos, the astronomy. There's a fair amount of astronomy in the book, most of which I had to learn to write the book.
Yeah, every character must require a tremendous amount of building your own knowledge so that they have their own knowledge. I was interested by the relationship between Silas and Dominique, or Dolores, because she's such an entirely unappealing character, but he seems so singularly obsessed with her. And I was wondering where that comes from.
Well, some of the early rejections of the novel, one of the objections made was that they didn't understand how a man, any man, but one like Silas, could be attracted to Dominique. And most of these were coming from men, which I failed to understand, because the woman is attractive, the woman has good legs, and the woman is smart, and she occasionally is sarcastically funny. And I said, any one of those alone, especially good looks, you've never heard of a man who fell for a woman who wasn't the greatest person, but she was beautiful? it amazed me that somebody would say that. But he's definitely smitten by her, and it takes a lot of negative experience to eventually pry him to open his eyes, let me put it that way.
This is Intersection on KBIA, and today we're talking with author William Least Heat Moon. So the beginning of the story of Silas and Dominique begins in a town which I believe to be downtown Columbia, and unfolds sort of in the rural areas around Columbia. So you mentioned that there are a few pieces of the book that you could read us that relate to our town.
Yeah, yes. Celestial Mechanics is set in a county very much like Boone County, and readers here in Columbia and the county will recognize various places in here, even though I've moved them around a little bit. The book opens with this paragraph, which will lead me to the setting for the opening paragraph, based upon the old Tiger Hotel.
Yes.
Once again, I've changed a few things, but anybody who goes into the Tiger and walks into the lobby will recognize this. This is the first paragraph of the book. The storm began at 2 in the afternoon with lightning yielding to wind, carrying innocuous, irresolute flakes, whirling more than dropping until 3 o'clock, when they clotted into icy dumplings falling hard, and by 5 covering the town and emptying the streets of everything but the mournful silence of winter snowfall. Dominique enters and she meets Silas, but just before she meets Silas, I describe my version of the Tiger Hotel. 80 years old, the four-story hotel began as lodging for commercial travelers canvassing the university town, but recently the hotel had been refurbished into the boutique Drummer's Inn, with marble floors, chandeliers, brass railings, and walnut wainscoting in the lobby. The former boiler room became a cafe and the coal bunker a quiet bar, with a gas fireplace and twin bookcases holding a broken set of encyclopedias, a physics text written before the rise of quantum mechanics, a dozen Reader's Digest condensed books, and an array of worn paperbacks left by guests. Most of those details will figure in some small way from the book thenceforth, but it was... I've never described anything from Columbia with the freedom I had here. So the Tiger Hotel is not 4 stories and a few other changes, but I think it's recognizable.
Yes. And there's a sort of a sense of a lot of the little places in Columbia, like some of the smaller bars. Also, there's a university at the center of this fictional town. And then Silas eventually inherits a large property, about 100 acres on the outskirts of town, and it's very wooded, and it has possibly an pre-colonial Native American burial site on it, and there's a gorge, and it's just such a Missouri landscape. You've been around the world and all around the U.S. I think I read somewhere that you've been to every single county in the United States.
That's right, yes.
Why did you choose Missouri as opposed to, I don't know, there are probably some more obviously spectacular landscapes.
Columbia, for me, for a traveler, it's very close to the center of the country, so I can go any direction and hit a coast at 2 days to the east, probably 3 days to the west, the border with a day and a half. So it's a good location. But I grew up in Kansas City, and I've been here since 1957, when I came to the university to study journalism. And my first impression, like so many college students who come to Columbia and the university, was, oh, God, well, let me get out of here. But once I could get out, by then I changed my mind. I thought, no, I want to stay. I had to go into the Navy, came back 2 years, taught a few years at Stevens College, and then also at the university in English and writing. And by then, I really had decided I like Boone County. I like the territory. I like the terrain. I like the people. And if we ever get a really good beer in this town, I'll be locked in. Well, the craft beer movement came along.
It happened.
Yeah, which I have to say that I helped along with an article in the magazine Atlantic Monthly by doing a story on handcrafted beer. So once we got some brew pubs here, it was really an easy thing to stay. Yes, yeah. And it helps, of course, that Columbia is blessed with a fine county library, county-wide library right here in the city, and also the very grand University of Missouri Library, which we'll be doing a fundraising for tomorrow.
That's right. You have an event at... Where's the event tomorrow?
It's at that Flat Branch Pub where most of my other books after Blue Highways were released. So it's a chance to come down and pour a pint or whatever you wish and pick up a copy of Celestial Mechanics, and in so doing, supporting the University of Missouri Library. The funds raised are going to the special collections, the so-called rare book collection.
It's a wonderful collection.
It is, yes. This is the unusual part about it, Sarah. If a person buys a copy of the book, it's in hardcover. It's a really good-looking book, I think. They receive a manuscript page, an original manuscript page from the Celestial Mechanics.
That's fun.
And if they contribute $50, they get an entire typescript chapter, original chapter with my editing marks on it from Celestial Mechanics. I've never heard of a writer doing this, so this may be a really stupid thing to do, but we're going to give it a try and hope to help Ellis Library out.
This is Intersection on KBIA. Today we're talking with author William Least Heat Moon. William is Missouri-born and a Boone County resident. We're talking about his new book, the novel Celestial Mechanics.
I was wondering about your history and the history of Silas Fortunato, because he is also a person who he's worked as a journalist, he's taught, he also does not carry a cell phone or any other mobile device. He finds them, yeah, to be really restrictive, and you also don't. Is Silas a parallel to yourself? Is he a version of you?
Well, I certainly have pillaged from my own life to help build him as a character. There are a few things in there that are just quite literally from my life. His stepping away from organized religion is the exact story of what happened to me. But other things are distorted. But I must say that I think Silas is a better man than I am. If somebody reads it and say, well, that's Heat Moon or Trogdon, so many people know me here, trying to plump himself up. No, it's not that. It's that I wanted Silas to be likable for the reader. He is the central character. He's funnier than I am, too. I can be funny if you give me 14 years to write a book.
And Silas really, in a way, rejects new technology. He much favors old technology. He always carries a compass. He gives his future wife a compass, and that figures somewhat heavily in her later life. What does this mean for Silas? What does it mean to, you know, reject carrying a smartphone but to always have a pocket compass?
Well, he's suspicious of our dedication to technology that we see. It's all over the world now, but certainly it's in this country. I had a talk to give at Disney World, of all places, and I saw people down there going to Disney World, and they were walking through Disney World, this place with amusements left and right, and so many were walking with a smartphone in front of their face, clicking away, and they would sit down on a bench to rest, and they weren't looking around at the beautiful scenery. Disney does a tremendous job, as so many people know. They were sitting there playing with their phones. Other people were sitting with Bluetooths in, couldn't hear, couldn't see. They were taking in whatever that phone was sending them. And I would occasionally walk past some of the benches where people were sitting, look over their shoulders to see what was on the screen. And so many of them, especially the young, but the older ones too, were scanning through selfies or Instagram pictures. And I thought, my God, you're here in this really lovely place. Why would you be playing on your phone? Well, Silas is opposed to that. He doesn't carry a watch because he loves compasses, and he points out that a compass, if you don't damage it, a compass is virtually always right, always points to magnetic north, whereas a clock depends upon technology to keep going. All the compass needs is the planet Earth and the natural magnetic field here.
And Dolores or Dominique, who marries Silas, it's interesting that you bring up selfies, because one of the sort of defining aspects of her apartment or her home is that there are pictures of herself all around, and she's constantly seems to be reflected back on herself, and she is sort of a hollow person. I mean, there doesn't seem to be much there to her. Do you think that's also sort of a symptom of this age where we're constantly observing ourselves and having ourselves reflected back on us?
She's smart. She's quick, quick-witted. But that wit is based on, at really, as you suggest, a very superficial level. She doesn't go beyond that. She doesn't go into where Silas finds his essence, his core of being. And he's hoping to draw her that way. And that's just not what she can do because she is entirely locked into self. So she looks at the stars, and there's a fair amount of talk about the stars in the book.
Yes.
After all, the title Celestial Mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And they just mean nothing to her. And as Silas says at one point in the book, when you look up at night at the sky, if you don't feel awe, then you really don't grasp what you're seeing. But you need to understand the celestial speeds and sizes and distances to be able to feel that awe. So it requires a certain amount of knowledge.
And the relationship between Silas and Dominique seems to be sort of on both sides, between people who believe that they can change the other into something more suitable for themselves. He believes that he can, you know, awake a depth and a realization in her. And she almost thinks that he might be able to do that too. And she thinks that she can sort of, you know, update him and make him less rambly and academic and more sort of socially workable, but in the end, they can't change each other at all.
Well, that's the way it is when a marriage happens, where people go in saying, well, this person will be fine as soon as I make a few changes.
Right.
And that's especially true of Dominique trying to change Silas. But Silas also wants to change her in that, as I was suggesting, to let her draw upon something deeper than these selfies that she's posted around her living quarters.
Another thing that I find interesting about their relationship is that when Celeste, the sister of Dominique, comes into the picture, she seems so perfectly suited for Silas. They are both deeply pondering their relationships with religion. They're both deeply questioning the universe and their place in it. And they have such an incredible bond, but his romantic fixation is always on Dominique.
At least for a great deal of the book, yes. But he slowly does begin to awaken through the power of love,
mm-hmm.
and the power of paying attention to that awe that he feels when he looks up. As he says at one point, awe is a moral emotion.
This is Intersection on KBIA. Today we're talking with author William Least Heat Moon. William is Missouri-born and a Boone County resident. We're talking about his new book, the novel Celestial Mechanics.
And I wanted to ask you sort of just more broadly about the extent to which Silas's life is shaped by women. There is a person who, you know, he works with as a private investigator later, and there's a bartender who's sort of a peripheral character. But really anybody who drives the story in any significant emotional way is a woman. Why did you make those decisions for the people who would, you know, drive the whole story forward?
Well, the book is a love story. I hate to use that phrase because it sounds so silly to me. It's not a romance, but it is a love story. The book really is about the big issues of connecting with something larger than ourselves. That was my motivation in writing it. To try to connect with something greater than just even our planet. I mean, we're sitting here, you and I are sitting here in the studio, and we are bipedal bags of stardust. I sound like Carl Sagan when I say it, but it's true, we are. And I think it's important for us to understand where we came from. I don't mean the next town down the road or the state here or there. I'm talking about where we came from over the last 14 billion years. At one point in there, Silas is looking at Celeste and admiring her face, and he says something. He thanks her for her face being there and comments that it took 14 billion years, almost 14 billion years, that's the age of our universe, almost 14 billion years to get that face to her. That face is made up of stardust. So to see ourselves with that kind of past, that deep, deep past, and the evolution from atoms into thinking, loving, caring, sometimes hating human beings, that's a long history. But that I just wanted to try to get people thinking deeper than and longer, deeper in time is what I mean to say, than we typically do.
Do you think that living in this period that we're in where everything seems so intensive and immediate and sometimes divisive, that it can be good for humanity to look to the distant common past?
Oh, absolutely. Especially the word I like that you used there was common. That's part of what Silas is trying to remind himself of and to get across to the women that he meets is the commonness that we have. I'm going to give a talk at Columbia College. I'm doing two of the commencement speeches tomorrow. And I'm showing a PowerPoint which is based – the images are based upon human evolution, starting with Homo sapiens and moving back through time, through the various primates that we descend from, and eventually ending up in a pool of algae. Algae is one of our direct ancestors. Take away the algae and we would not be here.
It's a humbling thought.
It is, yes. But it's also, I think, a remarkable thought as well as, stunning thought perhaps, that algae is a direct ancestor. And we finally get back to microbes. Well, then you ask, where do the microbes come from? Again, they came from the stars, from the celestial world.
What is your favorite thing about the book, or do you think makes it sort of a step in a different direction for you from what you've done before?
Well, it's in a way a kind of summation of my other books. It is, in my mind, a fulfillment to ideas that are in Blue Highways, for example, especially mm-hmm. so. I see the two books as being parallel. People have said, well, you know, you've written 8 nonfiction books, and now you write this novel. How did that prepare you? Well, I don't see much difference. If I'm writing nonfiction, I have to stay with what people have said. But here, I don't have to do that. If there's a conversation going on, let's say in the first year of writing the book, and I have an exchange there, but it's really not very good, I have 3 more years to sit there and polish that conversation until it says what I want it to say.
I mean, I've talked with a number of writers, and I think that the one thing that marks most capable writers is that they're willing to go back and hammer away and go back and go back and question themselves and throw things out and go out for it again.
When I was teaching writing at the university and at Stevens and a few other colleges, it was a real battle to get my writing students to believe that first drafts were not going to work, and probably not even second drafts. And what's happened is with the rise of laptops, the students will sit down and they'll put a draft in there, and they can justify margins. They have spell checks, so the first draft can look flawless, and maybe technically it is, but that's really not what they're missing. And that's one of the reasons this book took 10 years of notebook work to think about, 4 years to write, in that the ideas kept developing. The ideas that are in this book, and there certainly are many of them in there, they weren't all there at first. I had to think about this for those 14 years to find what the book is really about and what it was that I wanted to say about the universe. By the way, my jesting title for Celestial Mechanics is Love, Death, and the Cosmos.
So like small themes.
Yeah, yes, yes, yeah.
Thank you for listening to Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. And of course, thank you to our guest, William Least Heat Moon, for joining us to talk about his first novel, Celestial Mechanics. William will be at Flat Branch Pub on Tuesday, May 2nd for a book signing party, beginning at 4:30. If you'd like to listen to this show again, visit us online at kbia.org. You can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, where we're at Intersect KBIA. Our producers are Claire Banderas, Meg Vaderot, and Trevor Hook. Our music is Montana Skies. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM.